So welcome this morning to the presentation of Enki Böhm, Repcache. So we have a very small group and maybe you can come a little bit near. So when we have a discussion, I should not run to you to give you the microphone. Okay.
Okay, good morning. I hope you are not too hungover, like me. So, first you need to figure out if this microphone's cable is long enough. Good. Should work. Okay, I'm talking about reputation systems and reputation cache. Reputation is a thing everyone knows very well, even if not consciously. Because reputation is, well, I'll start with defining trust. Trust is what you think you know about a person, or predictions you make about the behavior of a person by past interactions of this person. So it's not your interactions with the person, but the interactions that you have seen. And reputation is the collective trust that the community sees in a certain entity. It's not just person, but in a certain entity. So if you ask someone else, can I cooperate with this other person? And can I expect not to be cheated? Then this is reputation. Or if you read in a newspaper about someone that he has done something good, then this is reputation. And reputation is a very informal concept in the real world. But as we move towards internet technologies or network technologies, where we do not act ourselves, where we do not interact ourselves with the other entities, but we have agents which do this job for us, which are coded with our preferences of interacting. So if we put up a web server on the internet and I put files on it, I'm putting an agent online for me, which is saying other people or other entities can download from this web server with the policy, possibly everyone can download, or this IP address may not download. There are, as you probably know or will see throughout this talk, more elaborate concepts of policy. Reputation, or to put it another way, I think there are three words important to the subjects I'm trying to tackle, and this is decentralization, incentive, and reputation. And why I think those are related is that, or I think those are related because reputation is an increasingly important concept when you look at peer-to-peer networks, completely decentralized networks, where you do not have the possibility of a central authority to certify entities. Because in decentralization you do not have a central authority, so you need group reputation, you need the community together to define how the trust. You have this in the GPG trust network, you have key servers where you can download a file, where you can download a key, but you cannot, they are not set certifying. People are certifying each other at key signing parties. This is one of the first kind of formal trust networks or reputation networks. And I think the internet originally is truly a true peer-to-peer network, but original design. it's a network of networks. It's internet working of networks, and it's kind of a odd thing, a historic thing, that people tended to program client-server applications primarily on the internet, because it seemed easier with programming styles back then, and in certain ways it has advantages, but it also has big advantages. Now, peer-to-peer first appeared in the public's vocabulary with file sharing, which happened around shortly before the dot-com crash, and so now there are new words for the same old thing. It's friend of a friend, social networks, it's the same old simple idea that you're communicating directly with many other people. Many people, many entities are communicating with each other, as defined by the need to communicate. The problem with client-server architecture is that single resources are accessible from a fixed known location until they become too popular and the bandwidth is saturated. So the basic primitive of the client-server concept is that you say on server X in directory epsilon is file set which I want to have. Or any scheme like this, where you say on this host somewhere specified by this uniform resource locator, there is a file or there's a data resource which I want to access. In file sharing, classic file sharing, you have a different concept. You're searching for the information by semantic data, just like you would search for classic client-server information using a search engine, and then you get a uniform resource locator. In the case of file sharing, there is no uniform resource locator, or generally there isn't. And you just download from a specific peer, which right now seems to have a file with a name similar to what you want. What is common between those two concepts is that you are actually in classic on a web server. You seldom remember the exact URL. It's kind of human readable, but in the end, most people use a search engine. And if they don't have a bookmark for the link they are searching for, they remember one or two words that will help them find the information again. So there's not so much difference, except that the data on the classical web isn't that volatile as a classical file sharing network is. Classical file sharing works until people start to defect, to cheat, to leech, to just download without giving back to the community. And then the network kind of breaks down because a lot more people are using up bandwidth, which is taking away incentive from those people who are sharing. And the economy, the file sharing economy, kind of breaks down. The next stage I see in network evolution, which is where we almost are right now, I think, is tit-for-tat file sharing, which is game-theoretic file sharing, which betters the situation by creating a simple incentive for cooperation. For example, BitTorrent was a really brilliant, had a brilliant idea of just saying, if you want a file, you create an ad hoc network of peers which share the interest, they want to download this specific file. As a resource locator or as meter information for the file, you create a torrent file, which is just a collection of metadata backed into a convenient data format in which you store first information how to connect to the other peers, and then checksums of discrete parts of the discrete parts of the files, or of the file or the files. So you say this file has like 2,000 parts. Any amount will do, and you check some each part and put this into the meter information file, which everyone who wants to download gets. But the nice part here is you can say, in the beginning you just beg for one of those parts, and once you have it, you can exchange with other people that don't have it. You give it to them, they give you a part they don't have. And what happens here is a very odd thing if you look at it from classical economical viewpoints, because you duplicate information, you give away the rarest part which you have, but you still retain it yourself. So there, if someone gives you a good downstream, you are also giving a good upstream. It's a very general concept. So as soon as this applies to many situations in life, and especially in peer-to-peer networks, if the other person stops your downstream or is not giving you parts anymore, okay, you are not giving back either. But everyone would follow their most egoistic strategy. So for optimizing their own downstream, everyone would also upload, because otherwise they wouldn't get good downstream. They would be stuck at 2 kilobytes per second or something like that. There are a couple of problems with the stage we are right now in or beginning to enter, with BitTorrent and similar file-sharing protocols. And I want to stress, this isn't limited to file-sharing. You can apply it to many. There are many kinds of transactions, especially on the internet right now, which you cannot pay for right now. Which you put a file online, people leech from you, and you cannot afford to put it online. Could put it online if people would mirror it, and you didn't have so much load on your server. And situations like this, where you would want to cooperate, provide something, provide a service, but would not want to have people take advantage of you. And to ensure fairness in such transactions, game theoretic file sharing concepts can be applied. I'm not going to go too deeply into the problems I see with file sharing right now, but try to give an outlook on the future, which is overlay networks. So while we had the concept, it's a server so-and-so, and I'm maybe look it up using metadata on a search engine, where the data is that I want. And in file sharing networks, I was searching for it in the file sharing network, and I get a temporary connection. It's on this host, but it's not even as fixed as a web URL. In overlay networks, it's driving towards the direction that each data, each resource, has its unique identifier, which isn't necessarily human readable, but it's unique. So if I go to a search engine for an overlay network, I just say, I'm looking for G-pop songs, and yeah, well, I find some resources related to G-pop songs, and it doesn't have a URL I can read, but it has a URL like F4CD and so on, hexadecimal, whatever, any format. I can store it, I can look it up again, but it doesn't contain the host name. So when I want a big file from my overlay network, and just one location has it, I take it from there. I can only download it from there. But after I have it, if someone else needs it, I can download simultaneously from the original location and from me. If you take geographic location or bandwidth costs into account, you can make things even more cheaper or better. You can just say, I'm in this cable internet provider's network, I have it downloaded already, or I haven't downloaded it, but someone in my network has downloaded it already, so I will go to prefer download it from there, because it's faster for me and it's cheaper and so on. So I gain a lot by specifying I want this data and not I want this data from this host. It's a lot too specific. The user wants the data or service or resource, and the location isn't important at all. No one cares. Authenticity is important, but I get that by checksum. Like the URL is self-certifying in a way. You can make self-certifying URLs which inside themselves contain checksums for the data. There are many ways to tackle those problems. But in the end, just because I remember some URLs right now, whenever I test my internet connection, I go to /.org, not because I'm fond of the site, but because I remember it. And I won't be able to do that. But on the other hand, I will still be able to go to a peer-to-peer search engine, or any kind of search engine index, and look up /.org. And I have this URL, I can bookmark it, I can set it as homepage. It doesn't only apply to the web, it applies to every data location, resource location concept. And what's important for this to work is there needs to be an incentive for cooperation. There needs to be a reason why I offer the data that I downloaded to others again. There is incentive for me to download, I want the data. But strictly egoistically speaking, there isn't necessarily incentive for me to give back what I took. So, in a way to provide incentive for cooperation becoming back to reputation, micropayments, complementary currencies, trust metrics, reputation metrics, which is saying, if I give back, people will remember and they will tell others. This is reputation. I give the file to someone else, and later on I need something from this person. This person will remember. This is trust. And now if someone else, they know, has something I want, they will ask their friends, their peers. It's kind of friends. It applies to social networks in the real world also. If I'm a trustworthy person, if I will give back, if I'm kind of a good person, and you do not need to really put this into words like that, judgmental words like that. Basically, the user doesn't need to see at all, because you won't modify software, you won't write software in such a network. Most people enforce good policy, good etiquette. You will never face people writing software with bad etiquette. So, because they would fare a lot worse than with cooperation. So what I'm saying is, if you want people to cooperate, we shouldn't ask them to cooperate. We should just design the system in a way no one ever gets the idea to defect or cheat. That it's obvious that cooperation is the right choice, because it is. Because everyone can win, especially with information, if they just share it in an intelligent way. It's cheaper, it's faster, it's more efficient, everything. Incentives for cooperation. Just a second. This is where there are still problems, for example, with BitTorrent, because BitTorrent does not remember reputation. BitTorrent just has a kind of local trust, so you have an ad hoc network just for one file. If you download two files at the same time, and another person is downloading these two, and you have a split horizon, you do not see cooperation for one file means also cooperation for the other. And you also do not remember from past transactions that just yesterday you had good cooperation with this entity. It's not stored in any way, so what you have is local trust. There are other means, other than reputation, for providing incentive for cooperation, which is to say, we're basically trying to mirror the way we do classic asynchronous transactions in the real world. Reputations, trust, promises, trust in the judgment, trust friends, security, money, currency, whatever. You need some kind of exchange.
before I understand that it cannot be called exchange because the two peers are not they don't know each other. You give when you receive a file, then you give. This is combined, but not to the same person. You give to a network.
Yes.
So this cannot be called exchange in a traditional sense, isn't it?
Well, if you can make it asynchronous. You have a point there. It's the reputation system is what we need is reputation instead of trust. Trust doesn't scale. That's the point. BitTorrent, you have trust. You only remember from the peers you know. There is no... You do not remember the other peers, so the other peers are not your friends. You just make local trust, and they cannot make suggestions to you. So it is a one-to-one exchange. It's not indirect right now. And where we are heading for, this is also why I'm talking about reputation right now, which is a hot issue, is if we want to scale, and if we want to complementary currencies to scale, we need reputation. The reason most trade circles and whatever failed is because they could not scale because they just worked on local trust. You need an implicit way to trust someone you do not know. Basic print, and it has been solved before. If you look at GPG networks, we tried to make a web of trust. It's a web of reputation, actually. We are saying this person has looked at the passport of another person and so on. It's exactly that. We are trusting trust. We're trusting the judgment of people we know. And this is such a general concept that I think the next applications on the internet will all be based on reputation applications. The next big things on the internet will be based on reputation. On call it e-commerce or call it networking between NGOs or whatever. It's helpful for everyone to be able to trust. The problem with classical current commercial micropayment schemes is that they fail to attract users because the users miss incentive. It's a different kind of incentive, but they do miss it. They have no reason to join a commercial network where they are supposed to put money from their credit card in without having any vendors that do have this micropayment system implemented yet, or very few. Nor do they really like to pay for it, because what I said is that there are many services which are not worth paying for. Right? If you share bandwidth, it's something you already pay for your provider. You do not want the additional burden of having to transfer money from credit card and so on. These are transactions that I don't think will be paid for with micropayments. It's not an ideological matter. It's a matter of being convenient to the users. That's the basic thing.
My name is Andrius Kulikauskas. I'm always skeptical about micropayments, but Clay Shirky has made a very important point about them. He goes, with micropayments, the problem is often the decision of whether this is worth it or not is such a waste, you know, that the decision costs more than the actual item. So, and if we look at business life, you know, I think many of us have the experience that it's much nicer to have three good clients than to try to sell to 1,000, you know. It's just the fewer operations that you can have, and the more that you can load off onto the system, you know, that things will balance themselves, the fewer headaches you have in terms of deciding what to do.
I agree, yeah, that's true. And commercial micropayment systems are heading in this direction too. Commercial micropayment systems like Peppercoin by RSA founder Ron Rivers, I think, are loading things off upon the peers. And there also are academic papers on subjects like PPay, peer-to-peer pay, which are payment systems, peer-to-peer micropayment systems. And
I think an important dimension to add, you've talked about trust, you know, and you've talked about reputation, but for me, when I make those kinds of decisions, well, Christ said, like, don't trust anybody. So I really don't believe in trust, but I believe in holding, you know, I believe in judging people's behavior. So I'll give an example. For example, RISE is a networking system where you list your friends. And of course, I don't list friends. I list my colleagues who want to be connected to me. But strangers, you know, all the time will ask me to be their friend, so to speak. And according, traditionally, many of the systems say you should not have as a friend someone you don't know. But I look at it different. I look at it, this is an opportunity for me to connect with somebody. So, and the only really way I can connect with them is to list them as their friend. So I go to their page. I look for a couple things. Are they able to write something intelligent in my guest book that shows that they know how to behave, not, you know, in a constructive way, number one. Number two, if I look at their page and see, like, what is their mission, you know, what is their interest, if they're writing about some literacy project in India that they're helping with, then they're my friend, you know. And I think that's, so it has nothing to do with, I don't know who they are, but I'd rather, it's like, am I willing to be fooled by them? Yes, I'm willing to be fooled by somebody in India who claims to have a literacy project, you know, because I think that's a good thing. And of course, everyone should check further, you know, before sending money or something. So I think what that says is that if we focus on behavior as a filter, we're developing a virtual incubator, which would be like an experimental server. And the idea is that a free service for the right people is a good business model. You know, then you don't have to have, again, the overhead of the contracts and everything, but you're saying, like somebody like you, who's willing to work openly on original projects, let's say in the public domain, I think I would say, yes, give him free wikis, free blogs, you know, free access to the server. That's an example, again, where you load off on the based on behavior.
Yep. Thank you. I think there's... I partially agree. I think there is, especially with RISE and such, social networking sites, there is a little mix-up, because they're basically asking you, do you want XXX to be your friend? And yes or no, and it's just something that is not very intuitive for people to answer. Because I have kind of a hard time saying, no, this lovely person with such a nice face, and she has children too, that is so cute. I looked at her album, it's so nice children, and I think she's a good mother. I really want to be friends with her, but, well, I do not know her. I do not know her at all, so I do not want to be friends with her, but I might want to chat with her once. I do not want to trust her, because it could be a fake person. It's a user interface. It's a user interface issue. If you are mixing concepts, you're mixing things up, and it's becoming a problem, because in a way, computers are becoming our agents. They're enforcing policy for us. They're punishing other entities. If they do not cooperate, they are remembering that other entities behaved good or not so good. They make transactions for us. Right now we all do this with intention. We actually enter our credit card or whatever, but the whole point of micropayments is people do not want their money to run out. Maybe micropayments are a good thing. The reason we do not have micropayments right now is there is a barrier, and it's a user barrier, it's a mind thing, it's not something technical. We have had solved micropayments for a long time. Maybe not really solved, but no, really, it wasn't a problem. We could do micropayments and we could improve on that, but users did not accept it. And as it is a user thing, it needs to be solved. We need to solve the needs of the users first.
Nero.
Okay. Well, so what I think there needs to be a kind of exchange system where people exchange, are able to exchange things, or based on reputation, to provide services without fearing that these services will be abused. So I can put online a video I made at some conference, which is 600 megabytes, or even a DVD, which I made at home, and I put it online for everyone to download, but I do not have the bandwidth to provide it to all participants of this conference. I want to provide this video to everyone, but not just from my server. The other participants, if they want to see it, they could as well provide it to others. It's a non-commercial endeavor. It's non-commercial. It really isn't about stealing other people's intellectual property. It is just about making things possible that are not possible right now because they are not affordable. So there lacks currency, any kind of currency, reputation currency, whatever, to make transactions people would like to make. And this is where I think we are still stuck in 2002 at the lowest point of the dot-com crash, in a way, where venture capitalists are still trying to fund, if at all, micropayment schemes which create money from day one using the micropayment systems. If this had happened in, I don't know, 1993 or 1995, whenever the web became big, we would have had a problem because the web doesn't make money. The applications on the web make money. And we need this peer-to-peer system. We need it to be open. We need it to be free. We can build on it. We can provide GPG keys over it. We can provide trust. We can provide social networking. We can provide chat, information filtering, sale of goods, kind of eBay applications. You can build whatever killer application, both commercial and non-profit, on this new technology. But for that, we need to look at what the users want and what the developers want and create an open platform for it. And this is what I'm trying to evangelize for, in a way. I think we should come together and try to make this open platform, because if someone tries to do it alone, it is going to fail. We need the users. You can't have many different web technologies and expect the web to have the same impact as one single united web based on open standards. Well, I do have some... There are many different plans, transition strategies and so on, but I do think this would go too far. Just to see the scope or the broadness of different concepts. You cannot just make e-tokens, micropayments, but you can also make reputation cash, which is just a model for money, which isn't thought out very well, but just to show there are different ways to bring reputation into transactions on the internet. It's the customer does pay the producer of information, of content, not with a money token in the rep cash scheme, but with a certificate, kind of a piece of paper that's with a signature, that he will tell people that ask him if the producer is a reliable person, certifying that person with a certain trust level and the date stamp and so on. And if I rate many people highly, my own trust will get lower. It's kind of like PageRank, where you get links from the outside, from other websites, and this gives you a certain PageRank. And if you have outgoing links, it's the weight of your links depends on how much reputation or PageRank you have yourself on the website, but it will also decrease your own PageRank if you have outgoing links. So it's kind of a voting system, a positive voting system. And now, if I do cheat, because this is a distributed system, Google isn't, and I say to someone else, know this person, I don't know this person, I don't trust this person, and because of this, a transaction fails. This person knows the transaction just failed, so this person can investigate, why did my transaction fail? I actually should have enough trust. Pulls out the certificate, finds out someone was lying, and can prove to everyone involved in the transaction this other person was lying. And thusly, completely trash the reputation of the other person. So you have, for cooperation, you get a slowly increasing reputation. But for defection, if it is proven, which might not happen every time, but if it happens, your reputation is completely trashed. You do not have reputation in this network anymore, except for negative reputation. And that's the whole concept, make cooperation attractive, because it slowly builds your reputation, but once you have it, your opinion has more weight. You're in a democratic, in a voting system, or you can generalize reputation and use it for many applications, be it voting, be it chat, secure communication, money transactions, whatever. You can rate products on a website like eBay or Amazon. You can give more weight to people that are also strong, buying a lot, or which are in your circle of friends. You prefer things rated by the people that are your friends and not hired by the producers of the product, basically cheating the rating system. One area in which I'm especially interested in, why I think reputation is important, is the area of peer-to-peer review of academic publishing systems, where currently reputation is built on journals, publishing in journals, and publishing together with other authors that already have a reputation, that are renowned scientists in a certain field. By publishing with them together, your own reputation increases. There are strange concepts like the Erdős number for mathematicians, which is like saying Paul Erdős has the number 0, and someone who has published with him is the number 1. Paul Erdős was a very famous mathematician who published lots of papers with lots of people, and you see, this is how far vanity in a way goes, I think, because you need this reputation. It's not just a concept that evolves because people are so egocentric or anything like that, but because you need any kind of metric. What do I want to read? Because for a long time, even before we had the internet and that much information, there was information overload. What papers do I want to read? So maybe it goes a bit far, this Erdős number thing, but in general, no one can avoid it. You need to know what you read, and who do you ask, what's interesting, you ask the people you respect. And I'm working on a scheme for peer-to-peer review based on the opinions you have of other people and the opinions they have of other people again and of other papers and so on. And I think this could revolutionize peer-to-peer review and make it possible to publicize cheaply but be still rated on the quality of your work. Because you just need convince one person which already has reputation, and you are inside this strong network of trust and of reputation.
Peer-to-peer review of what? Of journals? Of articles? Of papers?
Of articles.
But you want to generalize it to other fields?
I would like to start small with this project and from there continue.
But there are reputation peer-to-peer based systems, aren't there?
No, they are not. It's a project I'm working on.
But what about the published journals of some scientists' communities we have on web?
They are not peer-to-peer reviewed, they are peer-reviewed. It's a difference. They are reviewed by people who give explicitly their opinion.
Okay.
What I'm talking about is that the concept goes like this. How much time do we have left? Okay. Uh, No, well, I do not. It's an ongoing project for me. Mm-hmm. I would like rather to talk about it after the talk. Well, the only point that is left for me to stress again and again is that I think reputation is important, and there are many applications for it. And RepCache is just a catchy name for one sub-concept, and it applies to... It is a general concept, and I think it's important to create this basic network. My approach right now is just to take one viable way to start this peer-to-peer overlay network in an open manner, in a non-commercial manner, so everyone can build applications on top of this.
Sketch it in Roblox?
RepCache specifically, or Reputation?
Reputation.
Yes, Reputation basically is this, that you ask people you know already and believe that you can trust, that you trust for some reason because of past interactions, past behavior of this person or entity, that this person is capable of judging other people, judging other people in your own interest. And so if my peers think this person has interesting things to say, I'm going to listen to this person too, then I make my own opinion, and then after I have my own opinion, I'm going to tell my friends, if I'm asked by another friend who doesn't know about the third person yet, if I'm asked, I will give my own opinion. My opinion is just one opinion. Reputation is the opinion of all the people that I know that already had interactions with this entity. Okay. Sure, yeah.
You know, I think maybe several of us are working on similar systems or come up with a need, you know, for such systems. So the first time I was introduced to the problem, I was invited to, there's something called the Expert Web Trust or Expert Web Protocol. Have you heard of that or not?
No.
Okay. So there's a handful of consultants. Britt Blazer is a consultant in New York. Mitch Ratcliffe, have you heard of? He's a consultant in, I think, Washington State. And then Fleming Funch, have you heard of?
Oh, I have a bad memory for names.
So he's in France. So but Britt Blazer, so here's a very concrete a business problem where that comes up in the network economy. Britt Blazer was operating call centers, and in basically organizing salespeople. And what he realized is there's a lot of companies where incoming calls, you know, vary. So there's two kinds of sales. One is that people call you and you sell to them, right? The other is where you go call on people and you try to sell to them. So the latter, you know, the second is called cold calling, and it is very inefficient, you know, it's very wasteful. But the advantage of cold calling is that you can hire a salesperson, they can work from 8 to 5 at regular hours, and you're calling at your convenience. Of course, that's a bad way to sell. The other is to say people call you, okay, and then you're there and you respond. But the problem with that is that the pattern is very unpredictable and very uneven. So you cannot really hire people full-time to be ready for that. So it's a beautiful case where it's really helpful to have a network economy where you can have a team of people ready to help at any need, so that if there's a television program and people become interested in this one product, right, or something, you have a team of salespeople who are ready to sell that product, but maybe next day they'll help answer calls for some other product and so on and so on. So in order to make that scale, he needed to be able to hire lots of people. And then the problem is, well, how do we know that these people are doing a good job? So the types of reputation issues come up, you know, that we need to be able to say who are the better salesperson, who should take the call first, you know, these types of, there's many different practical questions where a reputation system would help decide. And so he was working on that, and then he had a broader idea of, well, I'd like to make a protocol so that any two people, you know, like independent consultants, they could know about each, you know, let's say they find out about each other, then they would like to offer their services. To be able to know that, how do I know that this plumber, or how do I know that this website designer is going to do a good job, right, or is going to meet my needs? So the idea was to have this open protocol where people would collect information, you know, basically they would record information back and forth about the deal, and then people would build up a reputation based on their work. So that, and that could be, they thought of, I think, and they wanted to do it peer to peer, so that you could keep a copy of the deals that you've had, and somebody else could keep a copy. And they invited me because they thought I could. I was looking for a project, you know, work, and they thought I could help with the XML markup, etc. But there were several problems that came up. One of the problems was the system is that they thought is basically sterile. If you have like a database approach, you know, where people are, database is dead. So what they wanted to do, they wanted to have like a front end on the web where you fill in this information, etc. And it goes back and forth, you know, that like the client, the customer fills it in, and then the person doing the work fills it in, and it goes back and forth, all the details of the contract. And it all goes basically into a database form that's stored as XML files. The problem with that, one of the problems is that it's dead information. It's kind of like somebody can erase the information, somebody can cheat, you know, somebody can fix it. There's just different problems. So from the very beginning I said, hey, the way to build a reputation system is to stay away from databases and use the web. Imagine, for example, I said, if we were working openly, and if there was a discussion group, you know, that both parties joined or belonged to, okay, it could be any discussion group on the web. But let's say that they negotiated the deal, or they kept in touch with the deal, and so we actually did that later. There was I moderate a group called Personal Brain, which is for the brain technologies. And there was somebody who, and I offered to work openly in small increments. So the idea was that if the work belonged in the public domain, I could work in much smaller increments than usual. I could work, like, say, for 100 euros a time, payable in advance, you know, very things that you could normally never do. But I said, so we're working openly, so we're going to keep reporting on our work here. So what happens is we end up with a public record of the work progress, and it's all on the web. It's not in a database, and it's under control of some discussion group, you know, owner. So then the idea is that I can build my reputation system for myself. So the idea is, first of all, I can build a reputation for myself of kind words or of contracts I've done or of things, and be responsible for myself and point to the web what people are saying. And that's really effective. Like, I've got dozens and dozens of times people have said on the web, Andres, you know, you did spectacular something. That's really profound. And I have an interest as a business person to collect that just for myself. But if it was in a form like you're saying, that, so if it's mixed, where there's a standard XML form where I can collect this, but the data resources are on the web, but I'm just collecting excerpts, and then we can do a peer-to-peer thing to say, hey, let's keep pinging each other. So, for example, I said, if you want to show that the contract is valid, the way you do that is you store information, they store information, and you point to each other. If you're both pointing to each other, that means that you're in agreement. But if you only point, you know, if you store a pretend thing, but no one's pointing back at you, that means it's fictitious. So there's this whole network that you get of people collecting information about themselves for their own sake, but then pointing to other people. And so that was kind of like, that was one of the problems and one of the solutions that came up. So I'm curious how that might fit with your model, maybe.
I'm not exactly sure, but I think we should discuss later. I really want to get out.
Okay.
Good, thank you.